Page Fright is recorded on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. These territories were stolen, and they are now the space where I inhabit and live. But the guests you're hearing on this podcast often come from different territories across what is now known as Canada. I encourage our guests, and I encourage you as well, listening at home, to take a moment to consider the territory you're on, its history, and how you might have come to belong here. My name is Andrew French. I'm on Instagram at Andrew W. French, and this, of course, is the only podcast in the world that I host. It's a fun, exciting episode today. I'm really pumped to be back behind a mic. I know I missed a March episode. It was a very... It was a busy, hectic month for me. I moved. I had a lot of other commitments going on. It was just a lot going on. So we're back. And it's April, and happy Poetry Month. Folks, this is the best month of the year, according to poets and me. So good of a month. So great. So fantastic. And me feeling so guilty for not putting out a March episode that you're getting to in April. That's right, folks. We got today's episode with the fantastic Kayla Zaga, who we're going to get to in just a moment here. And then another episode with a mystery guest who is yet to be named, coming out before the end of the month as well. At least that's my goal. I don't have it recorded yet, but we're scheduled, so we'll see. We'll see what comes through. But super excited for today's episode. Folks, this is one that it's taken me way too long to get to. Kayla Zaga has put out 3 books. They're all fantastic. We're going to talk about the latest one. But I've been following Kayla's work for a while and looking up to her as a writer. Just as long. I honestly, the first time I read her work was blown away, and it made me rethink the way that I was writing in a way that you want poetry to, but it doesn't always do. And meeting and talking with her for the Best Canadian Poetry episode a while ago that she did was really awesome, and I was so stoked to get a chance to chat with her. But of course, we only budgeted like 15-20 minutes because I had, I think, like 5 guests that year or something crazy like that. So we have a full time together today, and it was awesome. I'm so excited to share this interview with you, and I really hope you'll check out our book. It's called Midway. It's out with House of Anansi, and it's fantastic. It is heavy and light at the same time. The poems are touching. The poems are real. It's just, I think, poetry at its best. I'm so excited about this book. So I got to talk to her about it, and even talk about some of my own writing with her, which was really, really cool. So if you're wondering who Kayla is, let me tell you. Kayla Zaga is the author of 2 previous poetry collections. There was For Your Safety, Please Hold On, which came out with Nightwood in 2014, and Dunk Tank, which came out with Anansi as well in 2019. Her work has been shortlisted for the Governor General's Award for Poetry and the BC and Yukon Book Prize's Dorothy Livesey Poetry Prize. Frequently anthologized in the Best Canadian Poetry in English series, her writing has also appeared in The Walrus, Grain, Event, The Fiddlehead, and elsewhere. She lives with her wife on the traditional territory of the Lekwungen people, the Songhees, and Esquimalt nations. Here I am chatting with Kayla Zaga. Okay, we're back. It is our April episode, I suppose, of Page Fright. And my guest is somebody who it's taken me far too long to ask to come on the podcast. I'm so excited that you're here. It's Kayla Zaga. Kayla, how's it going?
It's going well. Thank you, Andrew. Happy Poetry Month.
It is Poetry Month. I'm really excited because I forgot / didn't have time, if we're being more honest, to put an episode out last month. So for Poetry Month, the treat for our listeners is at least two episodes, maybe even a third. So I'm really excited to put a little bit more out over the next little while. But so fitting that we're in Poetry Month and doing a poetry interview. We're talking about your new book with House of Anansi called Midway. I'm going to ask you some questions about it. I'm very excited about it. But before we jump in, could I ask you to read a poem from it just to get us acquainted with your work?
Sure, absolutely. Valentine's Day, 2017. The waterfall at Manoa doesn't think about what it's doing with its life. It simply falls. We hiked all afternoon through hot rain to gawk at it, two obvious tourists. Our sandals in the mud made the wet sounds of sucking on chicken wings. On that chocolate holiday of Will You Be Mine, we hiked among glossy tropical leaves up a Hawaiian mountainside in the hopes we might learn something about falling. When I return to that day in my mind, I still feel the cinnamon heart heat of my sunburnt shoulders and your heat radiating next to me like a shot of good whiskey. How brave and true and stupid and beautiful that waterfall looked, rushing up to the edge, then plunging on past it forever.
I love this poem so much. There were a couple things that I. So, okay. First off, peek behind the screen for the listener. Kayla was like, Andrew, do you want me to read any poems? I was like, this one. So thrilled that we get to start off with it. Couple things that I really liked in this poem. I love the ending. So good. And I had under. So, okay. Listeners of the show will know I underline my poems. I'm one of those people that destroys their books, and I do it with a multicolored pen, like those like four clicky ones. And so I used red for like lines I really like. And the part that I had in red here was we hiked among glossy tropical leaves up a Hawaiian mountain in the hopes we might learn something about falling. I love those lines. Had them underlined in red. They're what drew me back to picking this poem. So excited that you picked it. Kayla, I'm gonna hit you with the hardest question that I have right off the bat. Let's just get it out of the way. How would you describe your book for people who are unfamiliar with your writing or who maybe have read your other two books? How might this one be a little bit different? What can we expect from Midway?
Okay, so that's a hard question.
Yeah, I know it's like the hardest one, but I like to do it right away.
Okay, so like my other two books, it's mostly lyric poems, and exactly like my other two books, there are 41 poems. I think a more focused collection on grief. It deals with kind of the deaths of my parents, primarily my father, because he passed away right as my last book was coming out and it was on my mind. But then also my mom passed away in the process of writing Midway, and so that I was very preoccupied with grief while writing the collection, and it's kind of most of what came out of me, though the Valentine's Day poem I read is one of the few poems that does kind of more indirectly talks about grief. And it was one of the only poems in the book that was written while both my parents were still alive, which is it's interesting looking back on it now. I found it really hard to structure this book. In my previous collections, I have section breaks, very distinct section breaks that are narrative or thematic. And with this book, I couldn't break it up into sections because there was no real narrative separation for me in the process writing this book. It was all kind of swirling together and orbiting sort of this midpoint, which is grief. And so at the center of the book, there's the poem Midway and the long poem. And then the book kind of works like a mirror. So the seventh poem and seventh last poem are the Valentine's Day poems. And the fish poems are spaced equally among the halves, as are the teaching poems. And then the poem begins with finding an object after my my father passed away, and then the last poem, it's the last thing. So I structured it like a mirror, because it feels like I was always kind of trapped in something. Don't know if that makes a lot of sense. Maybe it does,
It
maybe it
does.
doesn't, I don't know.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think okay, so you handled the first question very well. It's always the hardest question when I just pop out, tell me about your book. So yeah, don't worry. It's really hard because nobody's ever expecting it. I don't know. But yeah, I love the way that this book is structured. So curious about the fact that all three of your books have had 41 poems. That is very specific. Is that like a calculated decision or just like a happy coincidence?
No, the first one had 41 poems, and then the second one by accident had 41 poems. And then when I discovered this, the third one, I had no choice but to have it contain 41 poems.
Right. Okay, awesome. I love too that there's no sections in this book, and I think the way that you've just described how it's laid out is really interesting too. How did you kind of, well, I guess you suggested it already. I'll ask you a different question, but the idea of having no sections in a book can be a little bit daunting, I think, to me anyway, when I'm like putting things together, not that I've published a full length, but even just for like when I read full length books and they don't have sections, it can be difficult sometimes because the section does imply like, or the use of sections implies that there's a bit of an arc to the book or that, you know, things are separate or whatever. But it makes a lot of sense in this case, especially the way that you framed it there about things being surrounding the grief and framed around the grief. It's really interesting. So I guess I wanted to ask you, A, did it feel different writing a book without sections or putting together a book without sections? And B, how do you know when it's a good choice to use sections in your book?
It did feel very different. I struggled with how to put this book together for a while. And I grouped a bunch of the dad poems and the fish poems, and then I moved some stuff around, and it wasn't feeling right. And the last 5-ish years of my life have felt like there are really no section breaks, in a like an existential way. And so at a certain point, I kind of tried it. I think I thought that there was going to be two sections, because I liked the idea of the mirroring of the two halves. But then in the end, it's not a perfect mirror. There's things that happen in the first half that don't recur in the second. And I thought by creating that the divider in the middle, that would be, I don't know, not very, it wouldn't be totally true to the heart of the book. I just couldn't have section breaks for this one. And with my two other books, it was really obvious, because I in both cases had a whole bunch of I used to really like writing in series, so I'd write a series of poems as in Dunk Tank about directed to my friend Kyla, and I'm like, well, that's clearly a section. Or there was that section of poems that were all written in the second person to like kind of a youth version of me, or the family portrait section in my first book. So I was used to writing like chunks of poems about one thing, and I guess in Midway, the chunk of poems about one thing is the whole book, sort of, with a few like moments of relief.
Yeah. Okay, very cool. We're at about the time, nice and early in, where I'm going to bring in a question for you that I did not write. This one is from Andrea Bennett, who was my last guest before the Best Canadian Poetry episode. We had Andrea on. So this is a question from a while ago. But Andrea was asking, without knowing I'd be talking to you, how you feel about swimming in the ocean.
That's a good question, because my book has so much beach imagery in it, but I can't really swim. So I feel a bit terrified about swimming in the ocean, though I do like to run in to about my knees as often as I can.
Fantastic. Okay, this is a perfectly aimed question then. Yeah, there is a lot of beach imagery in your writing. What draws you to beach imagery? Let's go with that as a question.
I live in Victoria, and so
Okay.
it's kind of all around me. There's something sort of terrifying and helpful about a beach when it comes to grief, because it takes everything away, and the tide cycles and the things that I'm a metal detector, so the things that wash in and out, yeah, it's funny. I don't generally use a lot of nature imagery. I'm not as drawn to it, but this book, there is a lot. And I think proximity and it's just so big and intense, and bodies of water. There, but beyond the beach, there's the waterfall, the poem that you from the Valentine's Day poem you asked me to read. There's a river of blood. There's a few other. There's a the river that's just filled with Celine Dion CDs. I feel like there might be a lake in here, but I can't actually pinpoint. But in my heart, I feel like there's a lake in this book. So I feel like bodies of water, like in the emotional, elemental sense, were helpful in this book, moving through emotion and relating that to water.
Interesting. Okay. I want to jump into a more specific question that I had, and this one is maybe a little selfish because I try to write a lot of family poems and think a lot about my family and my poetry. Okay, I think it's really hard to write a family poem because in their best for me, I think they're really specific yet have something universal about them. And there's this weird balance you're trying to walk between these things. So that's my take on it. But I'm wondering what you think makes a good family poem and how you approach writing poems like the ones in this book, because that balance that I was talking about of the specificity and the universal is really well found here. So I'm really interested in hearing a little bit about how you approach writing these poems.
Oh, that's interesting. Thank you. It family is kind of my comfort zone. I find it so much easier to write, or I found it so much easier to write about my dad than almost anything else, and I don't know why. There's just something about he was a very idiosyncratic person. And every time he would do something, it would just like spark this sort of energy, creative energy for a number of years. And I'd be like, well, immediately sort of write a poem about it. And so it's not really something I have to think about very hard, the Valentine's Day poem you made me. You requested that I read. It was a much harder poem because I don't write about romantic love very much, and those poems seem so much harder than writing about my family, because how do you write a love poem that doesn't, say whatever other love poem does, or is too exclusive, as you said, like too specific that a reader would not resonate with it. So I do notice. One thing that I have that is harder for me about family poems that usually comes out in revision is wanting to tell too much of the story, giving too much narrative, and then I have these pockets of the poem that just kind of get like weighed down with like because for me, like the narrative is like a big part of the family, like all of the stories and how they fit together. But putting that in a poem can really like weigh it down. And so going back in and stripping out everything that doesn't need to be there for the poem to be like an object that hangs together well is one thing that I still struggle with in family poems.
Interesting. I wanted to ask too, this is a bit different from the family poem question, but I have some questions that are specific to specific poems or that are inspired by specific poems. And so one of them is in Self-Portrait with Pizza Pop, which is one of your poems. You talk about being multiple selves. And this really resonated with me, especially when you were playing with age in the poem. So you write, and I'm going to give a quote so that, our listeners know what I'm talking about. You write that at any age, what I feel is real. So a lot of people kind of, and myself included, tend to discount younger experiences in terms of like credibility or seriousness, but your poems really foreground them in a way that honestly that I wish I could in my writing. So do you have any tips for writing about your younger self?
It can be, yeah, the line that you read. Where can you read it again for me?
Yeah, the one that I quoted was at any age, what I feel is real.
And then the line ends, even if it does not exist.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it's a good idea as much as you can to treat the younger you like a character if you want to write about them to create a little bit of a separation. There, I was a weird kid, and I look back and I had these overblown emotional reactions to everything because I wanted to be a poet, and I was very headstrong. And it can be easy to look back at that person with like a lot of embarrassment and shame. But when I look back, when I see, other teenagers, and people who are just kind of teenagers are, universally embarrassing. So I think owning the fact that that's an embarrassing experience and that, your younger self was doing probably as much as they could with like their level of experience and all of their hormones and whatever else was going on. So trying to kind of create this like distance where you accept them and see them and try to divorce yourself from them. And then I think in a way that if once you kind of create that separation, it's easier in a way to re-own that person. And also from that distance, it's easier to be a little bit funny, to make fun of yourself. And I think that that's a good way in too, because then it's like this insider joke that you and your younger self get to share. Because if you went back in time to when you were 16 and you got to talk to 16-year-old you about 5-year-old you who was being very weird and throwing tantrums about no reason, for no reason, you could like bond with that self about an even younger self. So it's, I don't know. I'm a rambler when I'm very bad at making points or getting
No,
around to the point.
I thought the big thing that I took from that was one actually the first things you said, which is that if you think about yourself as a character, as opposed to yourself, you kind of divorce yourself from that reality. I really like that. And I will try and play with that in my own writing. We're about halfway through. I'm wondering if I could get you to read another poem for us.
I'll read the midway. It's given that we're halfway through. The midway. Finally, there is a small bottle that will solve all my problems, my father thought, and he wasn't wrong. It's impossible to have problems when you're dead. Busted from decades of night shifts, his body was an obsolete mill in a shuttered boomtown. And finally, there was a small bottle a magician had conjured from behind my father's right ear, pills like clown cars to carry him far from his problems. It was impossible for anything to be wrong, with Ferris wheel pupils lifting him up, offering views of the river far beyond his failed industry. Finally, there was a small bottle my father could shoot at to win himself the softest top shelf prize, the hugest blue elephant. Impossibly, for once, He had no problems, nothing wrong, no pain, no insomnia, no mortgage, no shame. The midway had arrived for my father, so he could just drink. Finally, there was a small bottle, and not be wrong inside impossible problems.
Hey, really fitting that you read this poem, both because it is the midway point in our interview, but also because I had a lot of questions about this poem and about the way that you approach writing about your dad, your mom as well. So one thing that I really liked, and I think this poem encapsulates it in the book as a whole, is that obviously in elegies and in poems like them, there's a temptation and a tendency to glorify the subject. And I think it's unavoidable sometimes, especially if you're not able to, separate yourself from the subject in a way that, like we were just talking about with the younger self. But your image of your father in this book is, well, I don't know if it's glorified. I didn't know your father, but I do think it's very well rounded in the sense that you capture difficulties in addition to successes and things like that. And so I wanted to ask kind of how you approach writing poems in this way that would be a little bit more, yeah, let's use well-rounded as the term, I think, or capture as much as you could about your father instead of, like, I think what the tendency is with an elegy where you just list the positive things. I don't know.
I guess we're going to come back to shame a little bit. And so there can be a lot of shame when talking about family members who struggle. And the idea that, someone is less honorable or worthy when they are having problems of this nature, like I describe in the book. And I think that those sorts of feelings can they kind of isolated me when my father died. There wasn't a lot, I didn't really talk to a lot of people about the circumstances. And I think that that kept me really separate for a while. And then I started doing a bit more research about I don't have the rolling overdose death count in BC for the year, but it's not great. And this is a thing that sort of a lot of families and people are faced with. And learning more about, I wanted to talk a bit more about the opioid crisis directly in the book, but I didn't know, I couldn't really get there in the end. So there's a couple poems that sort of touch on addiction, and I felt as though once I had heard these stories and seen more about how this kind of really touches like everyone right now, it kind of impelled me to speak and say more about this. And I don't necessarily think that my in previous poems, my father's taken on kind of almost like a godlike quality. I do idolize him in a lot of ways. And I don't find him less of an idol because he struggled in this way, especially given what he had to go through as a young person. So.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think that's one of the things that I really appreciate in this book is that you're willing to explore those things. It's very raw. Like if you're listening to this and you haven't read the book, it is extremely raw and it's heavy at times. And I can only imagine writing a book like this is either really heavy or really freeing or both. But it's probably both. But yeah, I can't imagine what that experience is like. Especially with some of the things that you talk about in this book kind of happening during the writing process. It's a lot. I do want to bring up another line for you It's kind of on this subject of heaviness. So this is from which one is it? Oh, The Sadness of Marge Simpson, which is another one of my favorite poems. You can tell from these poem titles, if you're listening to this and you haven't read the book, that you need to read the book. But one of my favorite lines that I've read, not just from your book, but just like period, about depression or sadness or grief, is yours in this book. And it comes from this poem. You write, "You can run all your life into new lives, but sadness is an episodic bitch." Can you tell me a little bit about this line? Where does this come from? What's the goal of this line? I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you. This was kind of one of the earlier poems that was written, which is funny that it's near the end of the book, but that's how it worked out. And I think that I reacted to grief a bit like a project at first, where I moved. I got a cat and I moved, and I got really focused on my health, and I really wanted to crush grief. That's my personality. I wanted to like, but that's not really how it works. You turn on the TV and there it is again. You wake up and there it is again. And so this poem was written out of that deeply humbling experience that you can't really think and act your way out of your feelings.
Yeah, I think that is one of the things that really struck me when I read this line was that, I don't know, I mean, from a personal standpoint, I've been dealing with depression since I was a teenager. I don't think that's like a super uncommon experience, but it does feel like the kind of thing that like you just kind of have to learn to live with because it doesn't go away. And I think that's why that line really stuck with me. There's something unavoidable about a lot of these things, and yeah, it's just a really powerful line. So I'm really glad that that's in the poem that struck out to me. It's highlighted in red, just like the other line. my weird personal system. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Kayla, as we approach quickly the end of our interview, I have a couple things I need from you. The first of which is a question for my next episode's guest. Is there anything you're wondering, for a random Canadian poet?
Well, I had a question in mind, and then Andrea Bennett's question was so fun and unexpected that I'm sad that I didn't come up with something so tangential and poetic. But because I had such a hard time structuring this book and deciding where to put which poems, I guess I wanted to know a bit more about other poets because I don't think ordering a collection is talked about as much in terms of like craft and process. So just if they had any approaches to ordering their collection that they found really useful and productive, or anything that they hadn't or wished that they hadn't tried even.
I like that too. Okay, so I'm gonna include both of those, and I'm gonna include them now because if you haven't heard the podcast, I do this mean thing where I ask you your own question. So, Kayla, how do you order a collection? Is there anything that you wish you'd tried in ordering your own collection?
I guess we already touched on this earlier. I'm a very physical and tactile person, so a lot of people know that I like to print out my poems and physically move them around a space.
That's right. Okay, hold on. Before you continue, Matthew Walsh, I think, mentioned this a long time ago and may or may not have mentioned your name in this process, but I have thought about this so many times and I've done it with chatbooks ever since. So helpful. So sorry to interrupt, but great
No,
tip for
yeah.
listeners.
Matthew and I were roommates for a while, and we may have both had our manuscripts taped to walls at the same time. It was really helpful for my first book, taping it to a wall and then moving it around, especially moving like writing in sections, like grouping the poems and then seeing where the holes were. The Midway, I didn't actually do that. I wrote everything down on post-it notes, and then I kind of did a big board with titles. and then moved it from there, and then I looked at the Word doc in terms of shape. I think looking at shape, it can be really helpful, which is something I didn't think about as much before, is like what are you like giving the reader poem to poem in terms of, I think I write a lot of like these really hefty single stanza poems, and working to not put a lot of those together, because I think that can create kind of like too much, not enough like breath. And I don't know if there's anything that I wish I hadn't tried. I think that all, if I deleted a bunch of poems because, I performed some sort of ritual that told me to, I might regret that. But I think for the most part, if you're like, anything that gets me to engage with my manuscript and think about it in a different way usually gives me some sort of insight or a new understanding to move forward in terms of order.
Yeah. Okay, I have one last question for you before we jump into a final reading. This is something that I have to give some personal background on because it's been an adventure for me the past week or so. I was reading an interview that somebody posted on Instagram, and I don't remember who was in the interview, so I'm so sorry. There's a chance that it's somebody who's listening and is a poet from Canada, but I read this person had said basically they do their best writing when they're not writing towards a project. And so this book is very much focused. There's a lot of focus on one or two subjects. And in the past week, I have had a manuscript rejection, which I'm happy to share on the podcast. But then read this interview and went, you know what? I'm just going to stop trying to write for this manuscript for a little bit, just see what happens. And in the past like 4 days, I've written more poetry than I think I have in the past like 3 months, which is fantastic to be able to share. But also really, really out of character because I'm trying to write something completely different. So I'm wondering like what advice you have for people who are in this situation of like, I want to do my best writing. I don't know if it comes when I focus on a collection or not. Basically, I can talk about this in the third person, or I can just ask you, do you have any advice for me? What should I do?
So yeah, the collection seems Midway seems really cohesive, but that just because it was such a big thing on my mind for so many years. And when I sat down to write a poem, I was not like, oh, I'm gonna do another. Some days I would be like, well, maybe there's something more to be said about my mom or my dad, but most days I would just sit down and be like, I want poems are so hard. And they're magic because you can't just make them happen. It's like bowling. I love bowling. But you get up there and you're doing the exact same thing that you did the last time when you got a strike, but it could just go into the gutter. So, and it could go into the gutter the next 10 times. I mean, I'm not really good at bowling. But poems, like, I feel like it's just like magical to sit down at a desk and string together some words that work. And most days when I sit down, it doesn't work. It's it's five years for 41 poems that worked. So when I sit down at my desk, I usually, unless I'm already midway through a poem, I just kind of like let what comes out. And someone told me, I think it was Carla Funk at the University of Victoria. She gave this advice that like to not focus too much on writing something cohesive, because you look back over the last few years of work and it will be cohesive because it was all written by you, and that distance will allow you to see some of your preoccupations. So I think just letting yourself write whatever, and it will somehow be cohesive in the end, because it all came out of one person's writing. Yeah, I usually don't start thinking about a manuscript until I feel confident that I've written at least two-thirds, half to two-thirds of the poems in it, and then I print it out. And then I usually just kind of like sit there and think about what I have. And I don't plan out poems after doing this. I might try. I did try to write the Valentine's Day poem to mirror the other one, which I was, well, most Valentine's days I sit down and try to write a Valentine's Day poem. But I just kind of like sat with my work and absorbed it and tried to do some line editing, and then kind of like said to myself, like, oh, this seems to be what's happening. And then just that sort of reacquaintance process helped me in like subsequent writing sessions. And occasionally I would give myself a prompt, like, oh, maybe today we can talk about like this thing, and then see where it takes me, just because it can be hard to sit down with nothing on the page to get going. But
Okay,
it's
very cool.
much
Okay, there's a lot
less
there for me to think about.
sorry.
That's okay. No, it's a good thing.
Congratulations on having a, like a manuscript that you're working with. That's a lot of work
It is a lot of
to
work.
pull
Yeah, thank
together.
you. Yeah, I hope it finds a home somewhere, but as listeners of the show will know, these things take time and are taking time, which I hope is normal. But yeah, it's fun to be able to look at it and be like, hey, look, all these poems work together and do a thing. It's very nice. So yeah, it's good to be at. Speaking of manuscripts, let's get one last poem from yours. Kayla, could I ask for one final reading for us?
Yes, I was going to. I picked out a different poem, but I don't read the Sadness of Marge Simpson very often, and
Nice. Okay.
your question, it made me want to read it. So
Perfect.
I'll end there. The Sadness of Marge Simpson. There's a coffee stain in my copy of Dean Young's selected poems that looks like Marge Simpson in a windstorm. I stare at this stain while not reading a single Dean Young poem, holding the book on my lap, hoping something will happen. What do I hope for? That all of the law schools I've never applied to will admit me, and that my dad didn't actually die, but has been in China this whole time, gawking at the Great Wall like he always wanted. And maybe Marge Simpson is with him, having finally divorced her declining franchise. What actually happens? The mail carrier slips the two chapbooks I ordered off the internet through the slot in my door. They land with a whoosh on my fake wood floor. I open them and say, "Hello, strangers. Let's get wrecked." Recently, I've been sad, so I moved to this island. It's nice if a little quiet, and I'm still sad. You can run all your life into new lives. But sadness is an episodic bitch. You can star on The Simpsons and the same for 30 years. One of the chapbooks I received was me, and the other chapbook was Marge Simpson, but both chapbooks were sad. Sadness is a lacy French maiden name buried alive under Simpson. Sadness has the same absence of friends as Marge Simpson, the same memorability. Sadness is writing this poem while Dean Young was still alive, editing it after he died, and deciding to book him on the same tour bus as Marge and my father. His original heart holds open the guidebook. Sadness is a mouse that kills a cat over and over with his trunk of endless props. One chapbook is called Itchy. The second chapbook is Scratchy. One chapbook will win prizes and one chapbook will be remaindered. Your husband laughs. Your kids laugh. You laugh too, your sad, throaty laugh. Sadness is a show within a show, a poem inside a poem. It gets you to the sofa and dictates how you sit on it. I open a box labeled plates and find plates, but between each of them is the sadness I forgot I wrapped them in. Grief is like that, I'm learning. I packed my dad's urn in a box with plastic cactuses and laughed when I found it. I wrote a chapbook called The Lost Daughter, and a chapbook called Famous Monsters, and a chapbook called The Sadness of Marge Simpson, and a chapbook called I'm Sorry I Left Without Saying Goodbye to Anyone, but no one would publish I'm Sorry I Left Without Saying Goodbye to Anyone. My new apartment in my new life has enough cupboards for me to hide certain things from myself, at least for a while. Oh, Dean Young, you were so goofy, you thought we couldn't see through tear-slashing human moods. Marge Simpson's impossible tower of hair isn't fooling anyone either. The only truth is it's blue.
Oh, Kayla, thank you so much for doing this interview. I think you need to read that poem more. It's so great. Please, please, please break it out at readings.
Thanks,
Thank you
Andrew.
so much. Yeah, it's so great to chat with you. I'm such a fan of your work, and it means a lot to get you on the show.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. I really appreciate your thoughtful questions and you sharing a bit of your own journey. That was lovely to hear.
So there you are. That was me chatting with Kayla Zaga. Kayla, thank you so much for coming on the show. I mean, what a blast to get a chance to talk to Kayla. I really enjoyed this interview. Her answers were very, very, very interesting. And I've been thinking about them. It hasn't been long since we interviewed. It was just yesterday. But I've been thinking about them the past 24 hours or so. And I am so excited to continue to do so over the next little bit as I get back into writing a little bit more. So again, just a reminder for you, it's Poetry Month, which means that just for kicks, I'm going to put out two episodes. And so there'll be more. So if you want to hear the next one, if you like this one and you're new to the show, or maybe you've listened to the show before and thought it's not for me, but this one really changed your mind, then hey, now's a great chance to subscribe because you're going to get another episode later this month. And if you're really, really keen, you could follow us on Instagram too. You can follow Page Fright Pod on Instagram is where we're at. And I post everything there. That's about all I got, folks. I'm just thrilled to be back, and I have a little bit more time in my calendar over the next little while, and so I'm really hoping to get back to this show and doing it a little bit more consistently, perhaps even more often than just once a month. But that is still the goal. So we'll hope for that. That's what I hope to deliver for you. And I'm really excited to keep talking about poems with some fantastic poets that that I'm reading right now. So fingers crossed we get some of them on the show. And I'll look forward to, you know, talking to you later in a little bit later this month. But for now, my name is Andrew French. I'm on Instagram at Andrew W. French. And this, of course, this has been Page Fright.